Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until He takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. My guest today, former BYU men's basketball player, Trent Whiting. Trent, thanks for taking a few minutes today. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So I have to tell you, when I talked with your wife, Amber, about you doing this, she said, and I quote, "Good, put him in the hot seat." Do you feel like you're in the hot seat today?
I don't stress it. Tell Amber I got this.
So what has the experience been like for you and your family to have Amber in this position as the head coach at BYU?
You know, it's been fun, to be honest with you. It's been nice to be back in Provo. And, you know, I always, when Amber started coaching, when we started our basketball club a long time ago, about 15 years ago, I was like, dang, I think Amber could be good at this. And she's always taken a back seat to my career and everything else. And so when the opportunity presented itself and she applied and, you know, was selected out of nowhere, right? Let's be honest. We were shocked, but at the same time, I was like, man, this feels right. You know, so it was fun to see Amber, you know, put her name in the hat and to be selected. And now there's a big challenge ahead, but that's just comes with the territory and something she's never shied away from. So I'm excited for her.
Well, let's talk about you. And I told you this is we're gonna go all the way back. We're gonna get to know Trent Whiting. So let's go back and talk about your playing career.
Okay.
First off, you had an incredible high school career. What role did sports play for you growing up?
Well, I think it was a different era back then, right? I mean, if you weren't playing sports, I had to, you know, at least in my family, mom told me I had to go to work. So I didn't want to go work construction with dad. So I signed up for every sport I could play. So
keep
I could.
Busy, right?
She always said, tired boys don't get in trouble. So my brother, my older brother and I, we played football. We played basketball. We played baseball, even wrestled growing up. So pretty active. There wasn't all the social media, video games, and all that crap. So we were playing, man.
Was basketball your favorite growing up?
My favorite, actually, growing up was baseball. I loved playing baseball. And I think it was about when I hit about my sophomore year in high school, it just flipped. And I was like, nah, I want to play hoops more. And
what changed?
I can't pinpoint one thing or another. I think I just started, you know, baseball I was good at, but basketball I really started to excel at. And, you know, I was good at most sports I played growing up, but when it came to basketball, about my sophomore year, that's when it really started to transition.
Well, as I mentioned, you had a fantastic high school career. Your senior year, you averaged, I believe, 27 points, 8 assists, 9 rebounds, and 4 steals during your senior year of high school, which then led you to Snow College.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you choose to play at Snow?
Well, like I say, it was a different era back then, right? I put up a lot of stats, but I was playing in the equivalent of 4A basketball here in the state of Utah. And CUNA was the high school I went to. It was like population 1,000. It was a bunch of farm kids from the outskirts that even made it 4A, you know. So it was big numbers, big stats, but we weren't playing at a really, really high level, just calling a spade. And so I think a lot of schools thought, oh, yeah, good athlete, but coming from Idaho, not playing anybody. So, you know, I started going to some basketball camps when I was like a freshman in high school, and one at the time that was extremely good as far as an individual camp was the Rick Majerus camp. And I started going down to that with a group of buddies. We would go and stay the week, and I did it like 2 summers in a row. And that's when Jeff Judkins kind of was like, man, this kid can play started asking me to come and do early morning workouts. And about my senior year, sitting there with no offers, his brother calls me and is like, hey, why don't you come play for me? I'll give you a scholarship. And so I went down and played for John Judkins at Snow College before my mission, and ended up coming back and playing for him again after my mission.
So while you were at Snow, I believe a girl on the women's basketball team caught your eye. How did that romance begin?
Oh, it pretty much was me, like, infatuated with her and her not caring if I existed for a while.
Isn't that how it is for most of us?
You know, pretty much. At least me, anyway. So, yeah, we met after my mission. It was her sophomore year, my sophomore year, but she was 2 years younger than me, and she was playing on the women's team. And shoot, JUCO, I mean, you bus together, girls play before the guys, and yeah, I met Amber pretty much because of basketball and road trips and everything else, and yeah, ended up getting engaged after that year.
So I want to go back, because you'd mentioned after your mission, and remind me where you went on your mission again?
Brazil, Porto Alegre.
How was that? Like, everybody is going to have a different experience with their mission. How did your mission, number one, prepare you, but how did it impact you once you got back?
You know, that's a good question. I think a couple of things impacted me. Number one, in Brazil, you walk everywhere. Like, you catch a bus occasionally, but you walk everywhere. And I came back really light. I had lost quite a bit of weight, came back, and I actually had to start trying to put on weight, you know, in the fall. But it actually really improved my quickness and whatnot. The other thing that kind of helped, I'm a firm believer that the year after your mission, you're really not ready to go at all. But it helped that John Judkins was kind of an hour and a half type guy. And we hit an hour and a half and he shut it down. And those two things really helped me kind of get through. One, I lost some weight. I was quick. But at the same time, the weight I started to put on was muscle rather than, you know, eating Snickers bars and crap like that. So that helped me a lot. And I would say by the time I hit Christmas, I noticed even with my own son, like, it took a toll on him by the time he hit mid-season. And for me, it was those two things I felt like kept me going, and I didn't fizzle out so fast.
Well, when you get home, as you mentioned, things were going well off the floor with Amber, things going well on the floor with you at Snow. And ultimately, as you said a few minutes ago, you ultimately end up at the University of Utah. At what point did you realize you were good enough to make that jump?
Well, about Christmas time, I had College of Idaho invited me to come on campus while I was home for break. And so I went by their campus and I started thinking, well, maybe this is my level, whatever. And then, you know, we just kind of took off in league, and we went 19-0 to start the season. And then the letters just started coming in. It was the letters back then, right? It wasn't even phone calls. And then we had about probably 10 games left. And I would come home and the answering machine was full of, you know, college coaches, and it just started taking off from there. And yeah, it just kind of blew up. And I ended up finishing number two in the junior college All-American voting rankings, and to a guy who ended up going on and playing at LSU. And so, yeah, once I got to about that point, I knew I was at that level.
How validating was that for you, that all the hard work was paying off?
It was extremely validating because, you know, being from Idaho, especially that era, you didn't have the exposure or opportunities. And I always felt like I'd go to these camps and I wouldn't dominate, but I knew I was at that level, right? And so I remember thinking, man, I can play at any of these levels if I just get the opportunity. So to finally be recognized at that level, it was nice. Let's just call that.
How would you describe your time at the U?
Well, before I even went to the U, I'll just say it was was kind of a pretty easy decision to go there, because at the time Cleveland had come in and he was kind of handcuffed on even having scholarships available. And so I remember he called me and was like, hey, you know, I would love to recruit you, but we have guys on scholarship and it's not going to change and I don't have any room. And so I was like, oh, okay, no problem. And I actually was leaning a lot towards Iowa State and Purdue. Both would fly in frequently to Ephraim, land in a small airport and come watch games. And I thought that was big time, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I was excited about that. And, yeah, it was pretty much my dad who called me and was like, hey, what are you doing, man? I was like, what do you mean? What am I doing? He's like, you don't want to go clear out there. And I said, why? And he's like, well, who are you going to end up marrying going clear out there? I was like, come on, Dad. He was like, no, just think about it. And he didn't care what I did, but at the same time, he wanted me to think about it more than just bells and whistles. And at the end of the day, I was like, you know, I'd probably be better staying close to home. And at the time, you know, Andre had played great at the U, and I didn't have really any option at BYU, so I committed to Utah.
So that begs the question then, had Coach Cleveland at BYU had a scholarship to offer you, would you have come to Provo right out of the gate?
I would have definitely came on a visit and made sure, you know, and checked the box, but I knew it wasn't even an option, so my mind never even went there, right?
Yeah.
The funny thing is, once I committed to Utah, it was like we were playing in the tournament up at CSI, the conference tournament, and Cleveland was there. And then I got, like, he called Judkins and was like, hey, one of our guys is leaving. We got a scholarship. I was like, well, I can't back out on a commitment now.
Yeah.
And so it was just weird, you know. Yeah. I'm not sure what the purpose was or why. You always wonder, you know, what's the reasoning behind everything, but you know, it is what it is.
So while you're at the University of Utah, Amber ends up at Weber State. So not only are you guys, as a young athletic married couple, how did you balance that where you're two different schools and mm-hmm. you guys, your relationship is still growing and all? How did you handle that part of it?
Well, it really wasn't that bad, because when you're in season, we kind of knew what the grind was, and we'd see each other, but it'd probably be at nights, and she'd have road trips and I'd have road trips. Even if we were at the same school, we knew it'd be different schedules. So we just decided, hey, let's live in Bountiful, because going north, the traffic is easy in the morning, but going south, it's going to be tough. So we picked Bountiful, and most of the time she was arriving to Weber State before I got to the U on the hill. So it was an interesting dynamic. We tried to support each other as much as we could. And then, you know, I end up taking a red shirt halfway through the season, so it became real easy for me to go watch her play.
When you look back at at those times, did you guys, because sports and basketball specifically was such a big part of your lives day to day, did you guys talk about basketball when you guys were together, or once you were home and you were just Trent and Amber, was it let's focus on us and other things?
Oh, I think it was a good mix, especially when we end up coming down to the Y. Like, you just have, you know, friends outside that are newlyweds as well, and you end up playing cards together and having fun. And so we just did a number of different things. And so a lot of basketball. I don't think he ever take the basketball or separate it out from other things, but we had a good balance of both.
All right. Well, you touched on the fact that you ended up down at BYU. We're going to talk about that when we come back. This is Deep Blue on BYU Radio. Welcome back to Deep Blue. Jason Shumpert along with my guest Trent Whiting. And before the break, we're about to get to the part where you go from the red to the blue and you transfer from Utah to BYU. What went into that decision?
Well, it was, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, I was at a point at Utah where I felt like I didn't really evaluate the playing style ahead of time as well as I should have. I was just excited to be playing Division I basketball. And that's one of the things that I tell kids all the time coming out of high school nowadays is, you got to really evaluate and make sure the program fits your style of play. And people always ask me, oh, what, you know, you left because of Majerus? No, I really didn't. Majerus wasn't, you know, he was tough, but he was fair. And but for me, it was just the style didn't really fit my style of play. If you go back and watch tape, Andre Miller, I mean, he played center all the way through eighth grade and growing up. And so Utah utilized him with a lot of back to the basket. And so when I came in behind him, it was a lot more of, hey, let's try to have you be like Andre. Well, that wasn't my game. I was up and down, high speed, dynamic, you know, trying to jump, you know, dunk on guys, all that stuff. And Andre was, you know, phenomenal player, but I wasn't him. And so I just felt like the style of play didn't fit me. And all of a sudden I started to develop a lot of leg pain and went and saw a doctor and they said, yeah, you probably got to shut it down for the year. So once I shut it down, I was like, it's probably a good opportunity to make a change. And so I knew there were scholarships available at BYU at that time. There had been some guys who transferred out and whatnot, and I just thought, you know what, if I'm going to make a change, now's the time to make a change, and so I did. So I jumped and ended up coming to BYU.
So did you have a conversation with Coach Cleveland, like, hey, I'll take that scholarship now?
Well, yeah, pretty much, yeah.
It's like, remember when you didn't have one, and then you did? Well, do you have it now?
Yeah, it was weird. Like, I try to think about like the process now and these kids hitting portals and stuff. And mine was like, they sent faxes. I had to pick five schools that they would send my release to. And so I picked five schools and they sent a fax to everybody. And I think they might've mailed the one to BYU rather than fax it. Chris Hill even told me that I'm not faxing that to BYU. I'm going to mail it. So
now, not only did you come to BYU, but Amber also decided to come to BYU. Was that a decision that you guys made together, or is that just the way it played out?
It kind of played out that way because she didn't transfer till the end of the year. She finished out the season with Weber. She was playing. And I'm trying to think about all the dynamics behind it. I'm so old now, you know, I can't even hardly remember. Oh, I do remember when I did make it official and came to BYU. One of the good things is they said, well, you know, you only need to come down a couple times a week because you can take classes at the Salt Lake Extension. So with Amber playing at Weber State, you know, we can make this work. So I started doing that, taking most of my classes at the Extension, and I think I came down a couple times a week just for ball and taking a few classes here. So, and I would load them up on one day and be done. So, yeah, it kind of played out once I was doing that. Amber was like, I'm trying to think. Yeah, once I was down here, there was hints about, hey, if Amber ever wanted to transfer, then there'd be a scholarship. And so once I told her that, it was kind of a no-brainer. Let's move to Provo.
So in 2001, you played Utah in the Marriott Center, sold out crowd. Everybody knows what BYU Utah means. What was it like taking on your former team?
Well, I'll say this. Most of those guys I'm really good friends with to this day. Jeff Johnson, Chris Burgess, all of those guys. Phil, you name it, across the board, bunch of studs. I really enjoyed playing with those guys. And so I think there was some video of, like, before the game, we're all kind of laughing and stuff. And so for me, it was, you know, it was a big rivalry, but at the same time, for me, it was kind of a loose game. I felt comfortable. I didn't really feel the tension of it, you know?
Well, clearly, you had 21 points to lead the Cougars in that game.
Yeah, it was
so
fun.
I would say, well,
I'm going to give a shout out to Britton Johnson because I put one in his eye that we still exchange text messages about.
Just send him a still of it, yeah.
He sends me a video of a crossover he claims he got me on, but yeah, we still exchange some videos. It's funny.
That is funny. So now that season was the first time that BYU had been to the NCAA tournament since, I think, 95. How much team pride did you guys take with that accomplishment?
Well, you know, I don't think we were thinking about the statistics as much as we just, if you look at that squad, I mean, it was a bunch of dudes hungry to win. And we were a little bit misfit-ish, you know. We had Trav, who was coming from Utah Valley. I was coming from JUCO, okay, half a year at Utah. Terrell was a Fresno City kid. It was pretty much McKelly holding it down and a bunch of us who transferred in, and we were just trying to make a run. And I if you look at that team, it was just a bunch of fighters. And we were kind of just caught up in the moment of we wanted to win every game and we wanted to win big. And so when we were cutting down nets, it was just kind of surreal because I don't think we ever talked about it. You know, we just wanted to win every game. So, yeah, just a cool dynamic. So we weren't really thinking about, oh, when was the last time we made it? Well, nobody really knew. We were just hooping.
Just going out there and
just hooping.
Just hooping it up. So, okay, so take me through now. Your collegiate career comes to an end. And there's always that decision, okay, am I going to try to continue pursuing basketball? Am I going to go into the quote-unquote real world? What was that time like for you?
Well, it was kind of weird because they actually took my last year from me here at BYU because they claimed when the Mountain West was put together, it was the summer right before I committed and signed at Utah. So the Mountain West made a rule, if you transfer within conference, you not only have to sit out a year, but you lose a year. Well, I had signed with Utah when we were still in the WAC. And so when I went to Utah and then I transferred, it should not have applied to me. And don't get me started on old Craig back in the day, the old
Craig Thompson.
Yeah. He was just trying to flex and they took the extra year away from me. And so I started pursuing agents and got down to it. They told last minute, they were like, oh, tell Trent to repetition for his year and we'll give it to him. Well, at that point, I was so far gone and set on playing professionally and going overseas, I just didn't look back. So I had always planned on playing pro. It was always a dream of mine. Whether it would come true or not, I didn't know for sure, you know. And I realized I was probably going to be an overseas guy. Didn't really fit the bill NBA-wise, and that came to fruition. Like, no NBA teams were calling to work me out. But I got an agent and, you know, had a few teams overseas that started looking at me. And one of them was, or the one that I ended up signing with was, had a coach that actually came on a tour and played here in the Marriott Center. And he said, you know why I picked you when I got over there? He's like, you know why I wanted you so bad? And I was like, why? And he's like, I remember playing BYU and those guys were tough, man. They were hitting me, punching me, knocking me down. He's like, I wanted a fighter. And so that's kind of how it played out.
So when you go overseas, obviously basketball's, for the most part, basketball is basketball. But it's the other things that are probably a culture shock. How did you handle that part of it?
Well, there's a lot of culture shock, that's for sure. I would say, you know, just talking about the things that are culture shock, like you get over there and you're so spoiled in college. I mean, Brother Jay was giving us brand new socks every day or every other day and, you know, clean towels and they wash your laundry and all that stuff. And you show up in Europe and they say, hey, okay, hit the showers. And if you didn't bring your own shower and you don't have shower sandals and all sorts of, I mean, it's just different, a different dynamic. And it is definitely culture shock along with, you know, there's a lot of rule changes that Americans, if you watch the Olympics initially, like we struggle with a lot of traveling and things like that because you can't drive. If you've got a left foot pivot and you're stepping right, you can't put the ball, you got to put the ball on the floor before you can even step that way. So just little things like that. There's a lot of culture shock, but I think if you're with your family, which Amber, she actually gave birth to Jace 3 weeks before I took my first contract in Italy. And so they had to get passports and stuff for him and shots and all that. And by the time they got it, 2 months later, they were over there. And when you have your family, I mean, you can do anything.
Yeah. So how long were you in Italy? How long was your playing career overseas?
It was a span of 12 years, but one of those years I sat out with a ruptured patellar tendon that I had surgery on. But it was over 12 years.
How would you describe your time over there? When you look back at it, I assume you look back on it fondly.
absolutely. I think it's probably one of the things that really developed us as a family. I mean, you pretty much got each other. And so, you know, the kids, we put Jason in Italian school and he hated it. And all they do is teach me Italian and this sucks. And so Amber, she actually went to school to be a school teacher. And so she flew home, got the curriculum and started homeschooling the kids. And, you know, there was a lot of homeschooling that was challenging, but Amber held it down. So, but for the most part, when you do stuff like that, you just come together as a family. And, you know, Jay spent his first 12 years of his life over there in Amari 9, and they had each other and had us, and it was irreplaceable.
Obviously, I mean, I get to see you and your family from a distance to a certain degree. So, I mean, I certainly don't, I'm not hanging out at your house to where I would know all, you know, all these details, but you guys come across as a very close family. How much of that is because of what you just talked about, that as you guys were growing as a young family together, you really, it was just you guys?
Yeah, I think it's 100% because of that. I mean, the things we did was ball, you know. I mean, Jace played on a traveling team, and then Amari, they didn't have girls, so she started hooping with the boys and playing on a traveling team. And then Sundays they were driving wherever Dad was playing. And I saw some video we pulled out the other, well, it was a while back, but we pulled it out, and it was some, actually right before our Italian trip as a family, or as BYU women's basketball this year, this dude sent me this video because he found out we were coming, and he was like, "You remember this?" And it was, I hit a game winner in Scavolini Pesaro where Kobe Bryant's dad played, and I'm running off the court, jumping up and down, and Amber jumps in my lap, and Amari's like 2 foot tall walking on the court, and Jace is going crazy, and it's just, you know, just fond memories. We had a lot of good times as a family.
What brought you back to the United States then?
Old age. Straight up. I mean, you realize when the step's gone. And that last year, I was struggling to get through. Your body struggles to recover. You just don't bounce back like you used to, you know? And that last year I played, I could just tell, I could still do it. I was putting up good numbers, but it was just such a process to get healthy, to feel good. And it was just like, it's time to be done. So
we've brought up your kids a couple of times, Jace and Amari. They have turned into fantastic athletes as well. Did you and Amber always expect your kids to be basketball players or athletes in general, or is that something that they just sort of gravitated to on their own?
We put them in everything and kind of let them choose. You know, Jay started out playing a little soccer. When he was old enough, we put him in football and baseball and basketball. And Amari, I think she was probably a better softball player than anything growing up, and was doing dance as well. She never really dabbled in volleyball, thank heavens. We got to stay with the round ball that's orange. But she was a great softball player. Amber taught her to bat from the left-hand side, and she was a slapper. And she was really fast, so she would slap and be on first before they were picking it up. And I thought she was going to probably end up doing softball. And then she started some dance, and then pretty soon, by the time she hit junior high, and it's kind of the same with Jace, about junior high, he stopped playing football, and it was all basketball after that.
Do you ever think, wow, not only was I a D1 athlete, my wife was a D1 athlete, but now both of our kids are D1 athletes. How crazy is that?
Well, when you marry well, man, it just...
It's in the genes, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, Amber's genes, so... Yeah, I was, it's kind of unique. You know, you don't really plan something like that. And it was kind of crazy that it turned out that way.
So you guys are obviously now down here in Provo. Mm-hmm. Amari is in Provo. Jace is up at Boise State. He plays for the Broncos. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to Jace in a second. I want to start with Amari. How excited are you? Because obviously she was originally committed to Oregon. But now is obviously going to be able to play this season here in Provo. How excited are you guys to have her close and playing here at BYU?
Well, you know, a lot goes into that question that you just asked. I mean, there was a lot of, I wouldn't say difficult times, but it was a lot of emotion going on. Amari, like you said, was committed to Oregon. She felt comfortable with Kelly Graves. Mom gets the job here and decides she wants to follow mom and come here and takes her official visit here at BYU and tears her ACL. And so, you know, it's been a challenging process. Am I excited? Absolutely. But at the same time, it kind of humbles you as a parent to recognize the fact that, you know, a lot of this can go away real quick. And so just hoping for, you know, Jeff's done a phenomenal job with her. She had surgery with Dr. Mack, who's the Jazz doctor. And Jeff's walked her through all of the rehab process.
And Jeff's the team trainer.
Yep. And Jeff has been really good with her. And, you know, so Braden over at Revere Health, and just a good team around her, and just hoping that she'll be healthy.
So Jace has a year under his belt up at Boise. So he's going into year number two. How's he doing up there?
You know, he had a good freshman year. He came in after his mission, I mentioned in a little bit earlier, and just worked his butt off in the summer to try and get in shape, get his body right, gets his body right, keeps working. And I went up there to visit him. I ended up dropping him off. I think it was 7 days after he got home from his mission. He checked in and spent the whole summer up there. And I checked or drove up there just to check in on him. And Leon grabbed me and was like, "Hey, dude, Jace, he's working hard. We're going to need him." I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah, we're planning on playing him." I was like, "I thought we were redshirting." He's like, "Oh, no, we got to have him." And so had a good freshman year, averaged, I think, about 13, 14 minutes a game, and came in and had kind of an assignment of facilitate the offense and play defense, and he filled that role. And this year it'll be, you know, hopefully make some gains and make some strides, but you know, he's still got a long ways to go, and he's just working on his craft, trying to be the best that he can be. I always remind him, you know, "Jace, I never touched a D1 court till I was a junior in college." So these first couple of years, I think kids get ahead of themselves too fast, thinking, "Oh, man, I need to start right out of the gate, and if I'm not, I need to hit the portal." And I think Jace has done a good job of being patient, listening to his coaches, and trying to improve on his game so that he can be a valuable asset for years to come.
When he committed to Boise, you guys were all up in Idaho. So he's probably thinking, "Oh, I'm going to get mom and dad."
Yeah.
They're going to come to all my games. Now you're all down here. Yeah. Was it hard to leave him up there?
You know, he had just come off a mission, so we were happy to, you know, let him go again. Just kidding. Not really.
Let him spread his wings.
You know, for me, it was like, I kind of felt like, well, this is normal. He's been gone. He's going to go check in. Yeah, I wish we were closer to see him more, but I think Amber was more disappointed than I was, and I just wanted to see him have a good opportunity. I feel like Leon is a good coach. He does a good job of putting his arm around the kids and developing them, and runs a quality program. So, yeah, we were sad to move further away from him, but at the same time, we recognize it's a grind. You got to do what you got to do.
All right, well, last question as we wrap things up. What does the what's the future hold, do you think, for the Whiting family?
A lot of sleepless nights. I just see a lot of grind. I mean, that's just I don't know how to put it in any other form. It's just I'm excited for challenges all the time. I think it helps you stay alive in life. I don't think this is going to be an easy process going into the Big 12. And I was just, you know, I was thinking the other day and I was like, man, this is going to be tough. But I love the challenge. I love the girls that are on this roster that Amber has put together. The staff has come together, the addition of John with Morgan and Lee and Natalie, and all the way down through the new video coordinator and a personal assistant. I mean, they're all ball. And I just see the girls putting up a fight night in and night out and not being a team that's going to roll over. And I think at the end of the day, the reason why people love college sports is the kids will get in, lay it all on the line. And that's what the Cougar fans are going to be wanting to see. And I think the girls will be bringing it.
Well, selfishly, I'm very excited for the upcoming women's basketball season. So excited to be able to call the games on radio this year. Thank you so much for stopping by today. This was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed it, because I certainly did.
It was awesome. It was fun. It was good to relive some of those memories. So yeah. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Thank you once again to my guest, Trent Whiting. My name is Jason Shepard. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.